want to talk about cars, Ferrari, GTO, RX, and even down to your great-granddad's Peerless. Welcome to No Driving Gloves, the car talk authority. Controversy, share the same seat. Enjoy the ride. Now your hosts, John and Derek.
Hey, you've got John here tonight. As I commented last week, Derek's at the National Association of Automotive Museum Directors or something like that. So he's at a national conference, expanding his knowledge, working on his career, and we have to give him a pass on that. I believe everything turned out okay with his issue from last week. Actually, we communicated a little bit about it. He filled me in on some of the details, but hey, all's good. We don't need to worry about Derek anymore. Now, you know, week later, he's out partying and living it up in the exciting world of museum directors. Don't know how exciting that really is. Me, I've just been paying attention to the automotive news and some of the things that have been bouncing around the last couple of days and such. And we had the big Rivian announcement. We're going to touch on some of that because that's really got me thinking about a few other things that I've known in the past or I've seen in the past, and just has, like I said, it just has me thinking, and I don't want to say concerned, but interested. Also, potentially our insurance companies may be lying to us over the last couple months. Maybe it really isn't these expensive materials and how expensive it is to be repairing these electric and hybrid cars and these aluminum cars. Maybe there's something else behind that insurance rate increase. We're going to cover a little bit of each, talk about each. And I don't know, should I start with the exciting stuff with retro cars? And it really gets me that we all hate electric cars. EVs are bad. EVs are evil. EVs are horrible. I don't want an EV. I wouldn't touch an EV. And then all of a sudden, a company comes out with this cool design. Might remind you of a Volkswagen Rabbit. Might remind you of a, to me, it reminded me immediately of the four-door Dodge Omni Plymouth Horizons. One of our former guests commented that he thought it reminded him of a Yugo. Now, that was a little stretch on the Yugo thing. And somebody said it reminds them of Lancia. And I guess you could probably put in a Fiat, a couple things like that. The old Fiat 124. Old Fiat 124, not the new Fiat 124, not the newer Fiat 124, but the Fiat 124. But either way, Rivian introduced this, surprised everybody, this very budget-friendly, muscular, overblown, looks lifted, a little bit of body cladding. And it honestly, if you can think of a Dodge Omni, Plymouth Horizon, Volkswagen Rabbit four-door, Volkswagen Golf, depending where you're at, it is very reminiscent of that, but it's an EV. And what's weird to me is it got talked about more than their other introduction. The other car that they showed, the car that's going into production potentially by 2026, if Rivian can make it. And I really hope Rivian can make it. But nobody's talking about that car. They're all talking about this other one that Rivian just happened to show. And then they showed even a more aggressive version of this car. And that's what everybody's talking about. And if I'm Rivian, am I sitting back going, maybe we should put this other vehicle out, which to me makes a hell of a lot of sense. This is where the buzz is. This is where the talk is. This is a price point that people love and people want to see. And why not give it a shot? Why not produce it, build it, show it? Sell it. If you're a company, and I don't understand Rivian a little bit, the RT1 and the, what is it, RS1, the SUV version, great trucks. They're controversial. Some people say they're horrible. Some people say they love them. A lot of the people I hear with them love them, but I've also heard a lot of people like their Fiskars, their Fisker Oceans, and I've heard there's a lot of issues with those too. Same with Lucid in that. That's on the unfortunate thing of being a newer car company, less than 3-4 years on the market, don't have the R&D department that the big manufacturers have. Hell, you don't have the R&D department that Tesla has, even though Tesla's R&D department is basically their consumer. But the original Tesla Roadster went on sale back in 2008 to the general public. So at this point, they've had 16 years of feedback. The original Model S went on sale in 2012, so they've got 12 years of feedback. So they use the general public as an R&D source, but they've got all of these little kinks worked out that people aren't quite as forgiving to Fisker Ocean or Rivian or Lucid or insert your electric car company here. Hell, they weren't very forgiving to Mercedes when Mercedes introduced their EQ series and it started to have problems. And I believe Mercedes has worked their way through some of them. And I mean, hell, Chevrolet's had their issues. Hell, we'll even talk about a Chevrolet Bolt here in the insurance portion of this conversation. But if Rivian can make it, if Rivian can survive, would it not be beneficial to them to maybe look at this? Producing this potentially lesser vehicle before the greater? I mean, you've already got your big SUV in that, and everybody knows you want a huge SUV, but maybe this smaller car, get some customers into your product. A lot of people are using their electric vehicles as second car, and this would be the electric car to bounce back and forth to work and run around town. And you would have your big SUV for traveling and family stuff in the garage next to it to begin with, gasoline powered or hybrid or whatever you choose there. Maybe even you have your full-size Rivian next to it. I just think it's a really good thing. If I was Rivian, I'd be rethinking it. I haven't read anything about them rethinking it. Hey, they've got to make it to the point where they can build either one of these two vehicles in a couple of years. They just announced that they're not going to build their Georgia factory, which will save them $2.23 billion of their cash on hand, which is only $7.5 billion. You know, some financial difficulties ahead of them, and they've got some struggles, which leads me to my other question that if somebody wants to fill me in on, doesn't Rivian have a multi-year order for delivery vans from Amazon? Is this the cash that, you know, I can't understand where the money's going and how the money's getting all burned? They sell the vans too cheap to Amazon, because I think at the time, you know, originally an investor in Rivian, Ford was an original investor in Rivian. And of course, everybody's pulled back a little bit. It's just something to think about. But what I was thinking is all of a sudden, everybody's talking about this retro looking car and we want the retro car. And Volkswagen did the same thing. They've got their, and I typed it into the damn description of the show, but I'm forgetting what it's called. Or the ID Buzz. It's retro to the Volkswagen bus, kind of both years or both real body designs, etc. But why all of a sudden are we now going retro with our electric vehicles? Retro was a safe bet back in the late 90s when it occurred. You know, Beetle came out in the mid 90s, when the PT Cruiser came out, when the HHR came out, when the S came out, the Thunderbird came out. I mean, we had all these retro cars, and the thinking was, instead of spending billions and billions of dollars, it's kind of just like the movie industry, instead of spending billions of dollars to develop a brand new style that has not been tested, let's take something from the past. Let's take Rocky and make Rocky 2. Rocky worked, so Rocky 2's got to work. Rocky 5's got to work. As Airplane says, like, Rocky 84's got to work. People want, or the companies want to hedge their bets, and they want to hedge their bets to making things that worked in the past. Ford kind of got the butt by the Thunderbird. They only made it for a few years, but they didn't have a lot of development cost in it. I would bet that overall they didn't lose money on the Thunderbird, the two-seat bird that came out in the early 2000s that was based on the LS platform, the Lincoln LS platform, that is. Oh. Chrysler, when they came out with the PT Cruiser, it was existing architecture, etc. Not a huge investment, but hey, everybody wanted this retro thing. And, you know, right there for it. I had a sideline front row seat view in that one of my family members liked that car, saw that car, happened to be driving down the road, saw four on a transporter and followed the transporter to the dealership. And one of those four were not already paid for by a customer and bought it off the transporter, had one of the first ones delivered. And then when I graduated in college in 2000, they drove it to my graduation and everybody in my restoration class wanted to see it and loved it. Now, of course, the PT Cruiser, by the time we got to 06, 08, when it finally died, you know, just got, thought of a gray hair old person's car and, you know, tricked out any however way and maybe a little bit more retro or, but they were a very good value and they brought back some of that nostalgia of a 30s era car. Hell, Dodge did it in 94 when they brought out the new Ram and dropped the front fenders a little bit reminiscent of the older vehicles because those designs sold to people and people would buy them. And there wasn't a huge risk. Now in the truck market, yeah, you changed your truck, but your truck's going to sell. Dodge at the time, now Ram, is a number three contender and now is actually contends number two every now and then. But these retro cars, but they all went through their life cycles. And by the end of the SSR, the HHR, the PT Cruiser, the Thunderbird, the Beetle maybe never suffered from some of that, but just about everything else did. They grew out of it or people just got tired of the retro. That was yesterday. We want something new. We want something fresh. And now all of a sudden the electric companies are doing it or the electric car companies are doing it, not the old Sesame Street thing. And I don't understand it. It worked once. Is it going to work again? To me, maybe it is. Maybe that's a safe bet. Go ahead and put out these retro vehicles to get some sales, to get some talk about your company. But don't tease us with it and not produce the vehicle. Let's be serious about it. Hell, Volkswagen's teased this. I'm fame of it again. That's how long they've teased it for. Is it's just such so forgettable. But this van of theirs, oh, here it's coming. It's coming. It's coming. And it's going to come this way. And it's going to come this way. Now it's coming in as an electric vehicle. Okay, quit. Put the damn thing on a lot and sell it. I believe they're actually the ID Buzz there. See if the name came back to me. I ought to write it down. I don't know. They just, should we do retro again? Or should electric cars all be futuristic? Should they all be Tesla Model Xs with whatever, their falcon wing doors and their very smooth body lines or be their Lucids, this nice, perfect egg, aerodynamic, massively, you know, exterior for the least drag coefficient out there. What should these manufacturers be doing? I mean, it is a big risk. Like I said, the movie industry, why don't we get new movies? Why don't we get new TV shows? Why doesn't Paramount create a new TV show? And why is the number one comedy on streaming and possibly even television? I don't really watch network television anymore, is Ghosts, which is a rehash of a British television show, Ghosts UK. I don't know if it was actually called Ghosts UK originally. Shark Tank, it's a rehash of The Dragon's Den, which was a British TV show, which I believe is actually a rehash of another TV show from somewhere else. Office was a rehash of The Office. I mean, let's take something that works and give it to the people. But we don't want to have original thought because we don't want to develop a show. We don't want to develop a movie and put $200 million behind it and it flop. Or we don't want to develop a car and put $1 billion in developing and 5 years of developing and creating all of this stuff and have it flop. We want a style that we know will sell. So let's give them history. And before it was the Beatles from the 60s and the PT Cruiser and the HHR that echoed back to the 30s. And this was 25 years ago. And the people buying those were in their 70s or 80s. And now guess what? We've got this Radwood movement. People are buying up these 80s cars like crazy, the Malise era. And now all of a sudden we're showing retro cars that are not going retro to the 30s or retro to the 50s. They're going retro to the 60s and the 70s, and primarily the 70s and the 80s, and primarily the 80s. So are we in for a rash all of a sudden now of retro vehicles? Are we going to see Dodge Daytona rehashes? Or, the Mustang has done it multiple times in, 94 when the SN95 Mustangs came out? There I am using a chassis number, as much as I hate chassis numbers, but the 94 to 2004 Mustang. You know, I remember when it first came out, it had the three horizontal slashes for taillights, which harkened back to the three vertical taillight bars on each side of the 60. Well, we'll be nice and I'll do it for Derek. The 65, 66 type Mustangs. 64 and a half really wasn't a model year. That's nod to Derek. And then within a few years, they went to vertical three slashes. And then, of course, when the 2005 Mustang came back, it was a retro throwback to the 67 Mustang. Fastback, all this other stuff. And it's kind of continued along that evolution since even the 2024 Mustang. There's a lot of retro still to it, the style. You know, it's an evolution. Look at the 2024 Mustang, and a friend of mine recently got his Grabber Blue Dark Horse. You can still see that 60s era Mustang in that car. So it's a safe bet. Safe bet. A comment, the Mustang is starting to look like a 911. Well, what is it? The GT, I can't remember what they're calling it. GTD, the Mustang GTD is basically designed to be a competitor for the 911 GT3s. Yeah, it's, to be honest, if you really, really get abstract and squint just the right way, the Mustang looks like an Accord. So is the Accord stealing some of that style? Is we, you know, it's like I've heard here. Retro sells, safe bet, we're not going to lose any money. And maybe you already own the design. Maybe you already own the copyright on that design. You don't have to worry about putting a slash or a scoop or something that, oh, Ferrari owns that door cove, or Porsche owns that pop-up headlamp, which, yes, we can't have pop-up headlamps because of Europe anymore, which I think is, if I think about it, give me a minute here, that was going to be the third topic I was going to talk about. Yes, it is. Let me write down. Sorry for the long pause there. This was something I really wanted to touch on also. So what do you think? Give us some feedback here in the comments. Comment below, comment to the live stream, send me an email, producer@nodrivinggloves.com. Are we ready to do retro again? If the right retro design came out, would it sway you to buy an electric car? Or when you're buying an electric car, are you buying an electric car because you want an electric car and you don't care what it looks like? But I guess my question, to put the question simply, this Volkswagen Omni looking Rivian, if you're a diehard gasoline ICE engine person, well, the fact of this retro style, because it does look like your Golf that you had back in high school or you always longed for, is that enough to make you jump from the ICE boat to the EV boat? Let you think about that one for a bit. Are we ready for retro to be back? Jason says the obvious, the technology and infrastructure of electric cars is the shortfall. There's a lot more shortfalls than that, but I'm not going to get into a debate on the electric car. We have plenty of episodes about that. We're going to have plenty more. It's part of the car hobby. What crossed my mind here, and I took this long pause, is I heard by it's either 2026 or 2027. I don't have the article in front of me, unfortunately, and it wasn't saved to my article file thing that I use, my pocket article saver or aggregator, that we've all had this transition, and we've talked about it on the show, to touchscreens. And touchscreens are prevalent in everything. And Derek and I talked a couple of weeks ago, and there were only like three cars that were available without a touchscreen. And if you get into, you know, a BMW or a Mercedes or hell, anything. But if you get into a lot of these cars, the touchscreen controls it all. You've got to go through a menu to get to here, a menu to get to here, and go to here to get to the climate control, and then go from here to roll the windows down, and then from here to operate the radio, and then maybe you want to use your Apple CarPlay, and then all of a sudden you need to check the odometer, and then you want to check your gauges, and they're all, like Jason said, the technology and infrastructure of electric cars is a shortfall. The complication of a touchscreen with the buttons constantly moving and you never know where to find a button to, we can't text on our cell phone. Most places it's illegal to text on your cell phone. In Atlanta, you can't even touch your cell phone while driving. And I'm sure there's many other cities that are like that. But when you go to use a touchscreen, you looking at the touchscreen can take your eyes off the road for 30 to 45 seconds for the most basic activities. And if you're in there trying to go screen to screen to screen to get into maybe adjust your defroster so that you're getting all to the windshields or some to the side of the car, or you're trying to go bi-level on your air conditioning, get some on the floor and some out the defroster. However, you've got to go screen to screen to screen. And each one of those screens is taking your eyes off the road for, like I said, 30 to 45 seconds. Base case scenario, 15 seconds per screen. So you go three screens in, you're the most proficient of us are going to lose 45 seconds of looking at the road, which, you know, at 60 miles an hour, quarters of a mile that you've missed. And most of us aren't that proficient. I'm not necessarily that proficient driving and using a touch screen. I'm going to probably be closer to the 30 seconds. So now I'm losing a minute and a half. I'm losing a mile and a half of road at interstate speeds. And the slowest of us are losing 2 miles of interstate trying to adjust your touchscreen. It's absolutely ridiculous. But what I heard, and I have no way, it's not very nice, Jason's that Dana doesn't use her phone while because it gets in the way of eating and putting her makeup on. Well, she's just not a talented driver. I can cut a cigar, light a cigar, text, still adjust my podcasts. I learned a really neat trick, and that's a poor man's Apple CarPlay for my Fiesta. We'll talk about that one day. But don't let me digress. What the EU, European Union, they're the people that took away our pop-up headlamps. They're the ones that made all the front of our cars look the same so that when you hit somebody, you hit them above the knees so they fall on the hood and have a semi chance of surviving being hit with minimal injuries. But they have made it a requirement that certain functionalities of the cars have to go back to hard buttons. They cannot be controlled through the touchscreen. I guess that's good, but I'll take my 2015 Fiesta. It doesn't have a touchscreen. It's got the Ford Sync 1 system in it, which is this little stupid 5-inch green on black screen. And it's got a bunch of hard buttons. But I don't adjust my radio ever in that car. It's set up to input, 1/8-inch phono input. I don't use the Bluetooth. I don't use the USB. I use this phono input to play my iPad and my podcasts and stuff through the car. And the reason I don't adjust it is it's too damn hard to push media and then get it to adjust and then move over here to this lever. And I like my individual stuff. I like my radio with its buttons, and I know exactly what to hit on there. And then I know what my climate control is, and there's no screens. Everything is consistent every single time I go to do it. I don't have to flip the dashboard over 14 or 15 times. I guess Dana uses Bluetooth to apply her makeup. I'm not sure. Oh, no, I bet you she uses Bluetooth to use her phone while she's putting on her makeup and eating. I wonder if that should be a conversation, eating in your car. Be horrible, because I kind of do it all the time. I did mention in last week's episode that I'd bought a new toy for my car, which was this refrigerator on Amazon. Absolutely love it. When I turn the car off, it senses the voltage reduction from the alternator not operating and reduces the output to the refrigerator. So it does warm up a little bit. But it consistently will keep, I have it set for 36, keeps everything chilled to 36. And then I turn the car off. I usually go in and do one of my audits for about an hour and a half, come back and it might have warmed up to 50, 52. And that's sitting on my back seat. After I get back from my vacation this weekend, it'll get placed in my trunk, which will help some of that. But I'm going to put a link in the show notes, hopefully, and there'll be a link on the website. It will be an affiliate link for Amazon. If you've ever thought about buying a cooler, refrigerator, etc. for your car, this is a really nice unit. It's got plenty of room in it. And I've been real impressed. It arrived last Thursday, and I've been using it in the car every day. And it even came in handy when I was in my hotel room Monday night that the refrigerator didn't work. So I went out, got the thing out of my car, brought it in, used the wall plug, plugged it in, and I technically had a refrigerator or freezer. Jason says they took ashtrays out and added 8 cup holders. What the heck were ashtrays? Were those the things we used to keep our change in? The ashtray has always been crack the window 2 inches and put the, I'm not saying litter, but you're putting the tobacco back where it came from. You're putting the agricultural product back to agriculture, putting that charcoal out there so it could become diamonds. And I need my cup holders, damn it. One holds my ash can for my cigars and the other one holds my Diet Mountain Dew or Mountain Dew Zero or Starry Zero, which I have a bone to pick with Pepsi about that because they introduced this thing and they don't sell it in every store or every place. And it's cost them a lot of Pepsi sales for Diet 7-Up or 7-Up Zero. I believe they don't even sell Diet 7-Up anymore. And we're 31 minutes in. We've covered 2 topics, so 15 minutes a topic. Thank you, everybody, for listening, giving us a thumbs up and likes. Go ahead, if you're watching us on YouTube, to hit that subscribe button and then I guess ring that bell. That's what I'm supposed to say. That way you'll be notified of every time we are going to go live. We're definitely here every Thursday. And who knows, there could end up being some pop-ups from various places and such. But I heard this, this came to my attention listening to the Kim Komando podcast. I like to give credit where I get it. And it's actually a New York Times article that came out. It's published March 11th, so it's just a couple of days old. And it does say updated March 13th. So updated yesterday. I don't know what was updated on it. But let me go ahead and pull this up on a screen so I can at least keep looking at you and pretending I'm watching you. And I'll go ahead and read the first paragraph or two. Ken Dahl says he's always been a careful driver. The owner of a software company near Seattle, he drives a leased Chevrolet Bolt. See, I told you the Bolt would come back. He's never been responsible for an accident. So Mr. Dahl, 65, was surprised in 2022 when the cost of his car insurance jumped by 21%. Quotes from other insurance companies were also high. One insurance agent told him that his LexisNexis report was a factor. LexisNexis. LexisNexis is a New York-based global data broker with a risk solutions division. It caters to the automotive insurance industry and has traditionally kept tabs on car accidents and tickets. So upon Mr. Dahl's request, and he has a full right to his LexisNexis report, they sent him a 258-page consumer disclosure report, as they call it, which, as I said, must be which it must provide per the Fair Credit Reporting Act. Ken Dahl, yeah, kind of like the from the Barbie movie. Yes, it's D-A-L. What it contained stunned him. More than 130 pages of this 258 report detailed each time he or his wife had driven the Bolt over the previous 6 months. It included the dates of 640 trips, their start and end time, the distance driven, and accounting of any speeding, hard braking, or sharp accelerations. The only thing the report did not include was the destination that they had driven. For an example, on a Thursday morning in June, the car had been driven 7.33 miles in 18 minutes. There had been 2 rapid accelerations and 2 incidents of hard braking. According to the report, the trip details had been provided by General Motors, the manufacturer of the Chevy Bolt. And LexisNexis analyzed the driving data and created a risk factor score for insurance to use as one factor to create more personalized insurance coverage. So basically, the insurance company's advertising to you, and you can call any of the insurance companies and they'll sell you something you can plug into your OBD2 report, and you can, and it'll report back to the insurance company everything that your car is reporting back. And like I said, I heard this on Kim Komando's daily podcast. And then I was watching CNBC morning show that I watch every morning when I'm in a hotel. And they brought up this report yesterday morning. And one of the main host on the show, she said she had just purchased a new car and was contemplating doing one of the subscription services similar to OnStar. She didn't specify which car company she had, but she said similar to OnStar. And this report, or this article, has made her decision that she will not do that, because that's partially where this data is coming from. They're watching you. If your car is connected in any way, they are watching where you drive, how you drive. And I would not be surprised that if it could be down, if you take your car into a dealership, that it's not downloaded off any sort of computer that tracks this stuff and then can be reprocessed, be included. That's just my theory, but you're just, sorry, my thingy over here is talking. I must have said a bad word. There we go. We'll turn it down. But, you know, Mr. Dahl says he was felt like he was betrayed. And has his quote, "They're taking information that I didn't realize was going to be shared and screwing with our insurance." And yes, the insurance companies have had these little things and they've offered the incentives. And Jason just called it a safe driving app and get a discount for good driving practices. And I've never done it because they're going to give me a good discount for safe driving. You know damn well they're going to give me a nice rate bad driving. And their descriptions of bad driving is sometimes hard braking, which technically hard braking is better for your brakes than a nice, slow, gradual deceleration. If you want your brakes to last as long as possible, you're better off to fly right up on that guy behind you at the red light and slam on your brakes and come to a stop than you are to gradually slow down over 2,000 or 3,000 feet. So I, you know, their definitions are an abrupt lane change or sudden acceleration was necessary to avoid an accident, to flee something, to, you know, I could probably sit here and call a half a dozen reasons if I really thought about it, why you would have sudden acceleration. It's just ridiculous that this all goes back to information, and electric vehicles will be even worse because everything's communicated and cars getting their over-the-air updates. If you're getting over-the-air updates, I guarantee you that car's reporting back to the manufacturer, your driving styles and your driving habits, because the manufacturer is going to use that to help improve the vehicle over time. You know, maybe remapping the way an electric vehicle utilizes batteries, times or idle times or whatever it is. It's going to take, these things are going to take into account, you know, technically your car insurance, I believe, is figured on average amount of miles, 10 to 12,000 miles a year. And most of us drive more than that. Most of us drive, to me, the average is 20 to 25,000 miles a year is what the average person drives. But now you're driving twice as much as what you're paying your insurance for. And the insurance starts going, well, geez, he's driving 20,000 miles a year. And the rate we quoted was for 12,000 miles a year. So now does your rate double? I drive a lot. Fortunately, I know my black car doesn't communicate back. I'm not sure about my Mini. I'm not sure about the Corolla Camry, what Toyota's into script. But we just have to... There should have to be a opt-out for this, but I'm trying to think. You've got your smartphone apps. You've got I guess I just wanted to bring this up, that you can be aware that it is happening. Now, what can you do about it? The side of going back and, hell, not buying a retro car, just buying the original 67 Mustang and driving it. I really don't know. Face it, you're always being watched. And I could even say, go as far as saying it doesn't even matter if Ford selling the information, or Mercedes is selling the information, or Volvo is selling the information. Is Apple selling the information? Is Google selling the information? Is Motorola selling the information? Because your phone can detect all of this too. Sudden braking, hard acceleration, where you're going, at what speed you're going. The only thing it's not going to detect is, are you in the driver's seat or are you in your car? You know, if you go for a ride with somebody who bat out of hell, you know, you go for a ride with Vince Neil, you know, hard night of partying, and you got all accelerations and sliding and everything. And then you come back and say, so you drive in, ride in a New York City taxi with them, and while you're visiting New York. But if you're not driving, you know, but your phone's going to be able to detect all of that. You're being watched. There's nothing you can do about it. You know, I guess unless we prove TikTok is controlling this and the Chinese government, because since that thing with TikTok kind of passed, we got to go through a couple more steps, but nobody talking about from TikTok, but technically it's any Chinese company that reports their information back to the Chinese government, which technically every Chinese company by law, if requested, has to report their information back to the Chinese government. So technically, to me, if this bill deviate off course here, if this bill comes to pass and gets signed into law, every Chinese company needs to divest itself out of China. I mean, to me, it's leave them the heck alone, or let's just do a embargo against China. I mean, yeah. Major. Jason asked me OBD2 or later with built-in GPS tech. Actually, the little transmitters I believe that the insurance companies ask you to use do plug into an OBD2 port so they can get all your engine monitoring, and they probably would have their own accelerometers and decelerometers and all that other stuff and the ability to transmit. Jason's asking, when would the beginning of the collecting data have started? I would definitely say OBD2, possibly OBD1. And how much data? I mean, the advent of putting an odometer in your car or a digital dashboard, who knows how much that digital dashboard would be able to retain. But I doubt if back in the 80s, to me, gold was what was valuable. Today, information is more valuable than gold, and data is. And while I'm a car person and a podcaster, I pay a lot of attention to the tech, and I pay a lot of attention to some fear-mongering type people. And it is really, really amazing how much data can be gleaned from you. We sit here and we talk about in our home, we're afraid to have our Siri on. Sorry if I activated some. Or our Amazon device, or our Google device, or you know, all of these listening devices. Your car has the same thing. Got OnStar. To me, basically, I think if you've got Bluetooth in a connected car, there's a microphone there. And who knows what that microphone's picking up? Who knows what's being disclosed? There's nothing we can do about it. It's just, this is more of a, let's just make you aware that this happening. And for the last couple of years, people are going, why have my insurance rates went up? And like I said earlier, they've blamed it on how expensive it is to repair, how repair costs have went up. Labor has went up. Electric cars have added to the complexity of repairs. Hybrids have added to the complexity of repairs. Airbags have added to the cost of repairs. That's all true. But they have never said, well, you know, said articles basically referring back to 2022. Let's just go 18 months. Not once in 18 months really has it come out that they're utilizing this LexisNexis report in a way that the LexisNexis report never was created before. I mean, it used to, it tracked your tickets. It tracked your accidents. And, everybody knew that. We all knew if we filed on an accident, our insurance rates were going to go up. but we didn't know that it was actually now tracking braking, acceleration, start, stops, distance of drives. And to me, yeah, it doesn't report where you drove to, but there's enough computer algorithms that can probably figure out that if you drove 7.8 miles per day from your house for a period of 21 minutes, you're probably driving to work. And now we know where you're working. And then if you drive 3 minutes from work in this certain direction, I bet you you're going to the grocery store on your way home from work. And then, you know, because you can triangulate, and it's just, I guess this is into my conspiracy theory, but you've listened to me talk for 48 minutes. I appreciate it. We covered three, to me, which are kind of interesting topics, whether or not retro might influence you buying or giving up or throwing in the towel and saying, hey, I'm going to buy an EV now. We talked about maybe getting rid of, or maybe getting back some of the buttons on our dashboards, which would be, to me, so nice. I'll be honest. I've carried an iPhone since the iPhone 3S. You know, my ex-wife actually had an iPhone 1. So I've been in the iPhone for a long time, but I miss my Treo. I had a Treo 300, the big phone Treo, and a Treo 600 and a 650 and a 700 and an 800 and before I finally went to my iPhone. I love my buttons because I could type on my Treo without looking at it. I could hold it in one hand and I could type on the keypad on that. Just the way a good secretary can sit there and type away on a keyboard without looking, or a good accountant can operate an adding machine without looking. I can do that with a solid button. But when it's a touch screen, you can't do it. So we touched on that. And then, of course, we summed up here with our insurance data collection discussion. And I hope some of this gets you thinking. I'm not TikTok. I can't give you your congressman's phone number and email address and wherever you're listening, if you're in the United States, on how to report this. But I'm going to try. This New York Times article was behind a paywall. I don't believe it is anymore. So I might link the New York Times article in the show notes. I might quickly see if I can pull up the article on the dashboard and the touch screens too. So we might have some good stuff in the show notes if you wanted to research this any further. But that's just kind of John's long way of saying, Derek will be back next week. We really appreciate the number of viewers we're getting in the new live stream. This is why we went back. The idea is to get people here chatting and giving some input and giving their opinions. But as I always say, as we're wrapping it up, it's now time to get off our ass and go burn some gas, because John is out.